Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Right now, get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. Plus, get three Scotts Naturescapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, see Lowe's.com for more details. Excludes Alaska and Hawaii.
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of The Killer Bees.
Don't sweat the technique.
Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Ooh, what up, big town? Hey, how we doing?
He is Blank, I am Branham, it is Brian behind the glass. There's a Monday edition of The Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5. And ESPN 92.5. Houston Texans won a football game. Texans won a football game. 6-2, Brian. Houston Texans are 6-2. They are in first place. They're in dominating position in the AFC South. Like, if there's any team in the NFL, maybe Kansas City in the mix because they're undefeated. But the Houston Texans are as close to a lock as there is to be a lock after eight weeks into the year in the NFL.
It's a good spot to be in when we were talking going into this game, the what-ifs and the scenario that the division was kind of in the balance in this game this weekend because we had come a long way from the 2-0 start with everybody else 0-2. But at least with the win, you kind of solidified the fact that you've got a really decent lead and you've got the tiebreaker against the Colts. So essentially, it looks like you're going to get in regardless, and that's a good place to be in at this point in the season.
Yeah, that game yesterday was an interesting game. You win it. You win division rivalry matchups, and you just get out of it happy, right? You get out of it. Everybody's happy. Everybody's pleased with the way that turned out. Everybody's thrilled that the Houston Texans have won six of their first eight games. That they have a three game lead, and everybody's pleased. Everybody's excited about it, right? What's your main takeaway from that game yesterday?
The main takeaway is that the offensive line still sucks. And the fact that no matter how they tried to sugarcoat it or pat it and say they've got this and they're taking care of it and they weren't to the point of demoting anybody, we obviously found out that they maybe not as pleased as they tried to make it out to be. And they're more on the lines of where we are in terms of the fact that this line needs work, it needs help, something needs to change, and it's not very good. And that came with the benching of Kenyon Green. It still didn't get better. He had to come back in the game, but overall, the offensive line still sucks.
Yeah. Yeah. I want to start off a bit positive because the Texans won. You're right.
That
they made the change.
Enough?
The offensive line sucking? No, I don't think that was all that positive. No, I really don't think that. No, I mean, they should have made this move before the game. I mean, now, the fact that it was Jared Patterson caught me off guard. The fact that Kenyon Green got benched was the least surprising thing that happened in a very surprising game yesterday. But the Jared Patterson aspect of it was caught me off guard. It stinks for Jared Patterson. Here's his opportunity to shine, you know. And he gets a concussion 10 plays later. Stinks for him. I'm sure Kendrick Green is feeling some kind of way today that he was passed over for Jared Patterson. And then when Jared Patterson got hurt, they didn't go to Kendrick Green. So I'm sure Kendrick Green's in his feels a little bit today that he got passed over not once, but twice, got passed over for a second-year player, and then got passed over for the guy who got benched 10 plays prior. So I'm sure Kendrick Green isn't feeling all that positive. But my biggest takeaway from that game yesterday is that I did feel like the Colts gifted you that game, and that's not the most positive thing either. But they gave you the turnover at the end of the first half. Like, if you're Jim Irsay, I think Shane Steichen can kind of coach him up. I think he's okay. But his game management leaves a lot to be desired. How is he throwing the football late in the first half with a quarterback who had the lowest completion percentage in, like, modern NFL history? That, and if you're going to throw it there, okay, but shot plays. Like, let's see some goes. Let's see you throw it up for Pittman. Let's see if Josh Downs, who had a big game yesterday, can pop free on, like, a double move or something like that. So if you're just hell-bent on throwing the football deep deep, where if it gets intercepted, it's an arm punt. But for him to throw short and intermediate passes, not once but twice, because Kamari Lassiter almost intercepted the pass before Jalen Petrie. I mean, the Colts gifted you that aspect of it. Anthony Richardson's the worst throwing quarterback we maybe have ever seen in our lifetimes. So, yeah, I feel like the Colts gifted you that game yesterday more than you won it.
Yeah, you're not wrong in the fact that we said going into the game that you need to look out for the one thing that he was capable of doing, which was get guys behind the defense where he has the opportunity to go with a big chunk play, and they were there again. But you saw Petrie's eyes with that the camera behind the quarterback. He baited him right into the throw and just jumped on it before he even released it, and basically knew that he was going to be, you know, getting an interception at the very least. And the more the game went on, I understand where you drafted him, and I understand that there's a lot, you know, that everybody wants to believe that he's your franchise quarterback. If Joe Flacco's quarterbacking you in that game, I think you have a better chance to win. I think there's more plays to be made, and I think that there are mistakes that wouldn't have been made that at a certain point as an organization, you just have to come to the realization, this kid's not ready, he's not very good, and if you are truly about winning right now, the wrong guy's quarterbacking that football team.
Yeah, I'm torn on this one, to be honest, because you owe it to the 52 guys in the room, the other 52 guys that aren't Anthony Richardson, to play the guy who gives you the best chance to win. So I totally understand it from that aspect. At the same time, if Joe Flacco at the age of 53 is your starting quarterback, you're really going nowhere as a franchise.
For the long term, you're not. But I think, to your first point, I think you owe it to the guys in the locker room that think that the rest of this team isn't all that bad, and you were in a position yesterday to where you could really firmly put yourself in the middle of the playoff mix to give your to give the guys in that locker room the best chance to be a playoff team this year. And I don't think Anthony Richardson does that. Yes, he's a hell of an athlete. Yes, he can run. Yeah, there are times that he can throw a laser at you that can get some guys' completions. But overall, he is not a good passing quarterback, and I think he basically was a negative in terms of a positive at the quarterback position.
Yeah, I almost feel like they could go with some sort of Anthony Richardson, you're starting this game, and then if you struggle or we get behind big, okay, let's bring in the gunslinger Joe Flacco and see if he can, you know, rally and win one late. Now, teams don't do that sort of thing, so it's probably far-fetched. He did mention, Shane Steichen, that everything's on the table in terms of moves, but he also said yesterday how it's all about the process. So I don't know if he's actually thinking about it or if he's just doing the coach speak thing where everything is always on the table and basically just appeasing the question for what it's worth. Now, the main like positive takeaway I have from the game yesterday is that the defensive line for the Texans is really, really good. Even Settle and Foley in the middle. And they're missing Mario Edwards. Mario Edwards, of course, serving the suspension for some party drugs or whatever it was. I shouldn't have said that. Danico Autry, he actually played a smaller percentage of snaps this past game against the Colts than he did 2 weeks ago. But the defensive line of the Houston Texans gives you a puncher's chance to beat any team in the NFL. When you have Will Anderson playing at the level that he's playing, Danielle Hunter's still a very good defensive end. The defensive tackles are solid. The defensive line of the Texans can create havoc on the opposing quarterback, where they alone can keep you in a football game. They alone give you a puncher's chance to win, even against the better teams in the NFL. And look, they had 5 sacks yesterday. Of course, Anthony Richardson's not very good. But Anthony Richardson's also a guy who doesn't get sacked very often. I'm really impressed with this defensive line. I really have been all year, but I thought it was apparent yesterday.
Yeah, I think that when you see the kind of we talked about pressures early in the season, but when you see just almost on every single play, the way the two edge rushers, too, are able to get back into the backfield. And I think you alluded to it, but when you go back and look at it for a second time, Richardson is so elusive and so athletic that he escaped multiple times where just about any other quarterback probably would have been sacked for a 7 to 10 yard loss. But the defensive line has been a pleasant surprise to me because I didn't know what to expect of Settle and Foley and Edwards for sure, because I thought he was kind of on the downside of his career. But you know, you saw glimpses and Autry had the tip pass. But overall, as a unit, those guys are doing their jobs. You know, the running game was still effective for the Colts, which you knew it would be because you got a running quarterback and you got a really good running back in Jonathan Taylor. But the fact that they were able to just basically give the quarterback little to no time at all or force him out of the pocket so that he has to do what I don't think anybody, even as a Colts fan, wants him to do, which is throw on the run and try and create plays, you know, off script. But the defensive line has been impressive, and I think the secondary, for the most part, is better than advertised. Getting Lassiter back and the way he's played, too, was a nice surprise yesterday as well.
Oh, Lassiter was really good.
Yeah.
Lassiter, and he's not scared to hit you, too,
no.
Which I really like from a corner.
Except for the spatula.
Yeah, I mean.
You worry about if you hit someone too hard, the spatula might re-aggravate.
I'm not that worried about it.
I mean, at one
others
point
might
he did,
be.
He kind of, I saw him at one point grab it after a hit, and I'm like, oh, God, please don't let that happen again, because they're so much better defensively when he's on the field.
Do you think that it was a fractured spatula? Jury out. The Hive is the jury. 713-780-3776. Do you think Kamari Lassiter had a broken spatula?
I mean, based on what you said the recovery time was, if it was truly broken, I think, and based on our medical knowledge that we didn't stay at a certain hotel, but we were medical professionals after Kyle Tucker, I think that it was probably a very deep bruise. And maybe that's what relates to maybe a very minor hairline fracture. It just doesn't seem to be for the fact that he came back as quickly as he did, and he's hitting people as hard as he is.
You kind of hedged it with the hairline fracture there a little bit.
I mean, from a medical perspective, don't they say that, you know, if there's a deep bone bruise could be constituted as a hairline fracture? But it's hard to believe that there was any fracture as quickly as I'd say no.
I was in school long enough to get my whatever it's called to be a doctor, but I only got my bachelor's. I'm not a medical expert, but I don't think that's the same. Like, the recovery time might be the same. It might hurt the same, but I don't think that a deep bone bruise, like, breaks the bone at all.
Well, that's Kyle Tucker.
Yeah, I mean, Tucker's, they said, was broken.
Right, but I mean, look, the bottom line is the answer is no. I don't think that he broke his scapula.
Yeah, I don't think so.
For whatever the reason, and whoever, you know, Aaron Wilson and others who decided that might be a prognosis, I don't think he'd be out there, and I don't think he'd be hitting guys and throwing his body around the way he is. So I'm glad it wasn't, if it wasn't.
Yeah. I really want somebody to ask Kamari Lassiter, hey, what was the injury? Like, I really need to hear that for my own peace of mind. I don't think anybody else in the city cares at all. I really don't. I don't think anybody cares if he had a broken spatula. I don't think anybody minds Aaron Wilson reporting that. I think everybody just, hey, is he on the football field or not? But for my peace of mind and for my sanity, will somebody please ask Kamari Lassiter what the injury was, if there was a break? All right, 713-780-ESPN. We'll get your thoughts on this game. Still plenty to get to. Plenty of positive news to get to when it comes to this game. We will not ignore in victory what we wouldn't defeat a little bit later, and there might be more of that when it comes to the Houston Texans in yesterday's game. Mailbag Monday. Well, great. C.J. Stroud will hand out game balls, and what do you believe after this college football weekend? 713-780-ESPN, the HRP listener line. Call or text 713-780-3776. We're on Twitch. Twitch.tv/ESPN975, ESPN Houston on YouTube, at ESPN975 on Twitter. Blankers at Pac-Man Joel, Brian at Sacked by BMAC. I'm at Jeremy Branham. We are the Beast on ESPN975 and ESPN925.
You're listening to ESPN975. Coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
2-0-1-1, Texans got lucky, but how about them Cougs? 3 exclamation points. First walk-off goal going 15 years. Go Cougs. Also beat A&M this past weekend. Cougars beat A&M.
In a charity game?
A charity exhibition, yes, that's right. Two top 15 teams. Houston won by 20 before the starters got pulled out. 713-780-ESPN. Also on Twitter, Lamont saying, are we afraid to say Anthony Richardson is an awful quarterback because he's black?
I'm not afraid. Dude is trash.
He's trash at all.
Anthony Richardson's the one quarterback evaluation in that draft that I got right. The one.
Yeah, we talked about it. I mean, it was another one of the SportsCenter babies where, you know, he makes the play. I think it wasn't it against Utah early in the season that was all over SportsCenter where he escaped in the pocket in the red zone. I think it was for a 2-point conversion or whatever, and everybody couldn't stop talking about it. It's like, you still got to throw the football. Like, you're hoping that in a couple years, if you draft this kid, that you can work on some of his deficiencies and he can become, you know, what everybody was hoping he could become with his size and his strength and his athleticism. But the knock on him coming in is exactly what the knock on him is right now. He can't throw the football and he's not accurate.
No, they ran 58 plays yesterday. They threw the ball 32 of the 58 plays. Like, this was mostly, yes, at times the Texans had a two-possession lead, but this was mostly a one-possession game. They had the lead in the first half. And you threw it 32 times of 58 plays with Anthony Richardson? Like, I can see the allure of Richardson. Like, he's got a cannon for an arm. He does throw the deep ball pretty well, at least average to other NFL quarterbacks. His struggles are in the short and intermediate passing game. As a running quarterback, he's one of the very best. Like, the element of speed, the element of size. Like, I can see the allure of wanting Anthony Richardson as your quarterback, especially for that offense. But I do not understand the allure of wanting him to throw the ball 32 of your 58 plays. Like, if you had 60 plays and Anthony Richardson's your quarterback, how many times do you want Anthony Richardson throwing the football? And let's say it's always within a one-possession game. Either you're one possession down, one possession up.
15 to 20?
I'm at 10! I'm at 10. Yes, I want a. If I had 60 offensive plays and the game is always within one possession, either one possession down or one possession up, I want him to throw it 10 times. Now, he might run it 20. He might run it 20 times. And, well, you're going to get your quarterback hurt. I don't care.
That's
he can't throw.
That's kind of the problem, though, is I don't think you're going to stay in one possession games if you're only throwing the ball 10 times.
I disagree. With Anthony Richardson as your quarterback, it was a one possession game yesterday, and he was atrocious. If they ran the ball every single play, they probably win that game.
And Jonathan Taylor was getting his, too.
Oh, yeah.
He was. But, I mean, hell, Anthony Richardson tapped out at one point because he was too tired.
Yeah, it was one play. I mean,
I know, but I mean, if you're going to ask him to run the ball even more than he already is, I don't see how he.
Is that the worst thing in the world, though? Like, if you treated him like a running back, like a second running back, he's the running back. He is your running back. And what do you do with running backs?
When he got gassed?
Yeah. Like, yeah. Because,
it's not,
I mean,
it's not the worst idea.
People are talking about benching him anyways. So, like, who cares if he's out for two plays, three plays, five plays? Running backs get subbed out, right? Like, sure. Jonathan Taylor, 20 carries yesterday. No other running back actually had carries. Anthony Richardson had six. Joe Mixon, a high, you know, workload. But you have other guys that are in the game, other guys that are getting carries or snaps at the very minimum. If Anthony Richardson just runs it 20 times and you have to sub him out for five plays and bring in Flacco for five plays to either hand it off or throw the football, is that the worst thing in the world?
It's not.
I
know it was a one-score game yesterday. It was a one-score game when these two teams played in week one. I just think if the other teams are seeing that you're only going to throw it 7, 8, 9, 10 times, the threat of the pass is going to be less and less. And I don't know if they can survive.
But isn't it already? That's the thing. Like, isn't it already? Like, the Texans are running man coverage and making themselves suspect to deep balls. Like, sure. I think that they're already doing that.
But they're putting on tape they're at least willing to take the shots over and over again. If they're no longer willing to take the shots, I don't know if they could survive only running the ball against the types of coverages in front they would
true?
See.
Can't you run the football and be like overly predominantly run centric, but then when the defense starts to cheat up a little bit or take your shots when the spots are there, to where at a certain point the defense might overcompensate, come in too much, now you might be able to get, because we saw he is capable of getting the deep ball there, to where I wouldn't completely eliminate that. It's just everything in between, he's just awful.
I think it already exists. I think what you're talking about already exists. If you're defending the Colts and Anthony Richardson, what are you going to do? Like, it already exists. Like, well, you need to throw the ball. Okay, well, Anthony Richardson, throw 10 deep balls. Like, throw the ball deep 10 times. And, like, that's going to – even if you don't complete those passes, you're going to have the defense on the hills because, like, oh, we almost gave that one up. Our safeties better be, you know, sound on that. They better not be cheating for the running play. So, like, just doing it is going to make a defense be on its heels. So, do I want Anthony Richardson throwing the ball 10 times, 8 of them are deep passes, as opposed to throwing it 32 and keeping the whole playbook? Yeah. That's exactly what I want. They're more dangerous as a running team than they are a passing team. Yesterday's a small example, but they threw it 32 times for 140 yards. He also got picked off. He only completed a third of his passes. They were averaging 6 yards per carry with the Houston Texans defending the run, knowing that's what they're good at. So, yeah, if I'm the Colts, I would run it 80% of the time.
I mean, you have the right coach, too, to be able to draw up that kind of offense, to where you can be effective, and we've seen it. And I think that early on, when people were still giving him more of the benefit of the doubt on his passing ability, it was still effective until he got hurt because of the fact that Steichen's the kind of guy that can do that kind of system and move him around enough and get your RPOs and get him on the edge enough that you're going to keep defenses on their toes and you're going to be able to be effective. And if he could just complete a few more of the downfield throws, I think that offense could work simply because there's so much weaponry just trust in the running game when you put Jonathan Taylor behind him.
Yeah. Text on this, 713-780-ESPN. 7557, yes, it's the worst thing because that means AR is still playing. Needs to be benched. 0% of snaps played. We're talking about if Anthony Richardson's forced to continue to be the quarterback. And look, there were some bright spots in that game yesterday if you're a Colts fan. Like Anthony Richardson getting loose a few times. That, when do they happen? Usually, like there was one speed option where he got loose for about 20 yards. You ran the little end around with Josh Downs where he gets like an immediate first down. You mentioned Jonathan Taylor running for over 100 yards, and he completed some deep passes. Like the intermediate short stuff, I just do not know why they're so committed to running that play over and over again. Makes no sense. But the Texans are thankful. Tyler and Conroe, with the offensive mind Steichen has, you have to believe he's brainstormed all of this stuff and came to the conclusion that AR is too terrible to do the bare minimum. See, I think you can ask him to do what he's currently doing. You just kind of redistribute what you're doing. Yeah. No short, no medium stuff. Or if you do it just a very, very little, more deep stuff. And then obviously a heavy commitment to just running the football no matter what. No matter what.
No. And I think I guess the biggest problem is, too, is you've got a ton of talent at the receiver position that just – you could see the frustration in a lot of the routes that they were running when they came back to the sidelines, how many times they're missed, how many times the ball's on the wrong side and put where it shouldn't be when they're running routes. And sometimes he puts them in harm's way because of the fact that he kind of lays them out on some of the throws that he's trying to make. So you just – you have to understand that you're sacrificing a lot of talent on the outside, and you've spent some money on those guys, too. But at the same time, you have to do what's best for your football team. What's best for your football team to be successful with that guy at quarterback, if you're hell-bent on keeping him, is running the football.
Yeah, I'm with you. Like, I would run the – I would be a high school offense. Like, I'd run the Veer. I'd bring back the Veer. 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener. He throws the ball where there's not even a receiver on camera. Like, it's crazy. I've never seen an NFL quarterback throw the football so many times in a single game where there is not a receiver in the camera's view. It happened like three times.
Yeah, I was going to say, the one was like a sideline post route where you're supposed to throw it between the receiver and the sideline, and he threw it to the middle of the field. And you just scratch your head and go, how could you miss it that badly?
It's crazy. He is a poor thrower of the football. It's my one quarterback evaluation from that rookie draft that I hit. Richardson's not capable of throwing the football. 8410, it was fun listening to the commentators talk about how awful Richardson has been up to that point and how the Colts don't move the ball. And then the Colts are still right in this game. Texans still in the Bob era. 8410, if you think that's fun, you're a very morbid person. How is that fun? 713-780-3776. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line. Dom from Jersey's in the Hive, way up top in Jersey. What's up, Dom?
Gentlemen, thanks for taking my call. Real quick, just so you know, you guys were the first show I ever called in Houston about 5 years ago. It's been a long time.
I remember.
But I'm back, fired up for this week. I want to talk a little bit about yesterday's win. I'm damn proud of this football team, and I'm going to tell you why. I'm going to change the narrative. A lot of people are talking down on my Texans, but I'm excited. We have 6 wins. We're 6-2. We haven't even reached the pinnacle of what this team could be. We haven't even been anywhere close to what it could be. Texans years have passed. We've always lost these tight games, but we're managing to win them this year. And a lot of that's because of the defense. And one guy I want to shout out right now, you know, CJ gets his love. Nico always gets his love when he's on the field. I want to talk Will Anderson. He is an absolute dog, D-A-W-G. He is the heart and soul of that defense. His pregame speeches got me running through a wall. He has changed the culture of this team. I love Will Anderson. I will die for Will Anderson. Finally, Thursday night, I will be in attendance at MetLife Stadium for Texans-Jets. Last year was an ugly one. And if we're going to win this year, I don't love the matchup, but we're going to have to win ugly, and we could do it because now we have Joe Mixon. We didn't have him last year. Will's going to be back out there because he had the foot injury last year, if you guys remember. Danielle Hunter is going to get those clutch late-game sacks. Let's change the narrative of this team. Let's get a big win. Let's go 7-2, and then Dom from Jersey coming all the way to the H for Sunday Night Football against the Lions next week. I appreciate it, boys. Go Texans.
There you go. Rack them.
Dom, just all over. On it. Mm-hmm. You know, but doesn't Dom have a really bad record when he's in person?
I don't remember.
I think he said that they're kind of like
0. Well, he was in person last year. That went really, really, really poorly.
Yeah, he said, I think he's like 0-9. I think he dropped some number because we were like, if you get to double figures.
Does he only go to games in the Jersey area?
Well, he's flying in for the. He
I'm just saying, yeah, the Texans record after
he's got to stop going if they're not winning.
the Texans' record at the Jets and at the Giants isn't pretty.
Yeah.
I think they've got one win at the Giants, and that might be it.
Dom, whenever you're in Houston, swing by the station. Just make sure you do it before 3. Dom, D-A-W-U-M. That's how
like
much of a good caller Dom is. If you had a football player, does it matter much if he's a dog, D-A-W-G versus D-O-G? Is there a huge difference between
the two?
I don't know, man. I feel like it's pretty much the same. He's right, though. Will Anderson's a beast.
I think the interpretation comes through regardless of the spelling.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. Anderson's really, really good. He's a big reason why I'm bullish on this defensive line. I think the Texans are capable of beating any team in the NFL because of their defensive line. Like they could wreak havoc on Pat Mahomes. They could force the Kansas City Chief offense to have a bad day at the ballpark because that defensive line could wreak havoc on Pat Mahomes. The Ravens, I'm a little bit not as confident about because their ability to run the ball so well with both of their backs, quarterback, running back. But like if the Texans were playing the Lions and Jared Goff, yes, they have a really good offensive line. But do I think that the Texans' defensive line would have a chance in that battle, a chance in that matchup? Yeah, I think the Texans' defensive line has a chance against any single team in the NFL. All right, enough Colts talk. 713-780-ESPN. More from this Texans game from a positive point of view because the Killer Bees are always super positive. 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. It's the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, a word from a good friend, Doc Linville. He's right here in the Med Center, and he's making a difference in people's lives on a daily basis by getting guys' hair back. He can do it for women, too, but obviously the main priority is to get the guys that are losing their hair back, and that's why he hooked up with ESPN 97.5 and Granato and myself and others to make sure he got the word out, because he's told me multiple times, look, I'm not trying to make a killing on this. I want to help Houstonians and let them realize that this is an actual game changer. You get your hair back. It's not the gimmicks that don't work. It's something that actually does. It's your own hair that is put where you need it most, and most times that's in the hairline in front or the bald spot you got up on top and back. And basically, you can see the results immediately, and in 6 to 9 months when the hair truly takes root, you're going to see unbelievable results, and you're going to have them for the rest of your life. Because the one thing that I found out first and foremost is you never lose the hair on the sides and the back of your head, no matter how many other places you may lose your hair. He takes some of that hair, repurposes it, puts it where you need it most. That's the NeoGraft procedure. And you see the results almost immediately. And when the hair actually gets stronger and thicker and longer, you see them and you are pleased with them. And you know you're going to have them because he's taking them from a place where it doesn't go away for the rest of your life. Phenomenal. There's also PRP treatments where you've got hair still on your head, but you just lack the thickness and the kind of strength the hair used to have. The PRP is like fertilizing your lawn. It gets in there. It kind of gets the hair rejuvenated, and the hair gets back to the way that it used to look when you liked it a lot. All you got to do to get a free consultation with Doc and his staff is go to 975hair.com. It normally costs $150. You listen to us, want to talk to him, absolutely free of charge. Nothing to come out of your pocket, no signing on the dotted line or commitment to make. Just a Q&A session after they explain to you what they can do to help you, and then you can consider if it's something you want to do. I did it, couldn't be happier with it. He's the best in the business. You should check him out today and see if it might be right for you too. You have nothing to lose and a ton of hair to gain. Check him out today at 975hair.com.
ESPN 97.5. We're back with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. 9243, that's Tyler and Conroe, our dear friend. I hate the "we haven't played our best game" narrative. At some point, the Texans are what they continue to put out on the field. We are a team with a mid-receiving core. A subtle jab at Tank there, Tyler. With a mid-receiving core without Nico that can't pass block with a good defense. So he thinks that's what the Texans are. I agree with Tyler and Conroe in the sense of the narrative of like, oh, the Texans haven't been who they're capable of being. They haven't played up to their potential, which I do agree with. There is something to be said for winning games when you're not playing your best. Like, you have to be able to do that in the NFL or you're going to be a team that misses the playoffs. So there is something to be said for that. But at what point and how deep of into the year, I mean, there's 8 weeks in, Texans are 6-2. At what point in the year is, this is kind of who they are. The whole potential thing, the whole ceiling thing, it's like, you know, we thought they could be at a 10. They're currently playing at a 6. But if they're putting a 6 on film each and every week, At what point are they just a six?
Yeah, I think that's the biggest thing, is that a lot of people, and if the glass is half full, there's been a variety of different obstacles and setbacks that caused you to not reach your potential so far. But then you're this far into the season and you're looking at it going, at what point are you going to use injuries as an excuse for the entire year? Or, you know, all the different things where guys are in and out, suspensions, injuries, things are going to happen. But at the same time, you have to come to the reality at a certain point that your team may never be, on the field what you thought they were going to be on paper. But how good can they be? They have right now. They would be the 2 seed right now in the AFC if the playoffs started today, and they haven't played their best football. But you also have to be realistic in saying, hey, there's still some time to fix your deficiencies when you admit you have deficiencies. Because whether you do it in the media or not, we see this team enough to know there are deficiencies. The offensive line isn't fixing itself. You started to start to do the tough decisions that have to be made by benching Green and trying to do some other things. But there's a way that you can still get this team better. See the Chiefs and see what the Chiefs have been doing. They're trying to improve their team before it's too late. You still have time, and the good news is at least you've won the football games when you haven't looked your best to be in a very strong position going forward.
I think to Tyler's point, though, it's what if this is just who they are? Like, yes, you still have the hope they could fix their fixable mistakes. Yes, you have the hope that they could add at the deadline. Yes, you have hope that, you know, you can get all your key offensive pieces back at the same time, although I'm not feeling good about the Diggs thing. But hopefully it's like a meniscus and he's out 6 to 8 weeks and you get him, you know, late in the season. So I think his point more is, yeah, we keep talking about potential. Yes, all those points are valid, but if they keep showing us that they're this, at what point are they just this?
But I think that you can still change this to that if you get the right pieces. You just have to look externally. You have to stop thinking to yourself what everybody thought at the start of the year, which was this roster's loaded enough that they don't have to do a whole hell of a lot, and they're going to be, you know, a team to be reckoned with. And you do realize on the positive side of things, Joe Mixon is way more than what people thought he was going to be. So you may have to change your identity a little bit. You may have to focus on the positive of having a guy that, as bad as the line has been, whether they are getting all the credit for opening the holes or not, Joe Mixon's been very effective. But can you go out and find, because the receiver thing is a tough thing to call, because Tank was underutilized while you were trying to get, you know, Diggs and Nico the ball. Nico's hurt. If you have your full complement, you've seen that even Woods and Hutchinson are capable of contributing, even Mechie yesterday, to the point where the receiver room still had the potential to be even better. But I'm with you. I mean, if it's a non-contact injury with Diggs, I'm not thinking too positively about what the outcome could be. And if Nico's still going to miss, you know, the game this week, you desperately need him back, and you may have to focus on the fact that either you think the other guys can step up even more.
Sure, yeah. But, I mean, I think Tyler and Connor are again saying if they play at a six all this time, then that's probably their peak. Like, the peak is kind of what we think is the perception. But if they never get to that peak, then we were wrong about where we put that peak, and their peak's actually what they've been showing.
But what
us.
If they still haven't been able to get that, like, from the defensive standpoint? As good as the defense has been, if you get Edwards back,
well, then you would be showing something else different on film. Like, that's the point that he's making. He's saying if we could keep seeing that this is their level of play week in, week out, week in, week out, then that is who they are. So we haven't seen that yet. So, yeah, if we see that, it's going to change our perspective on things. We just haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, go ahead, Brian.
No, I just think we're going to get the answer pretty soon. Like, I mean, the teams that have put the Texans kind of in their place and shown that, you know, where the weaknesses are have been two NFC North teams on the road. So you have an NFC North team who's arguably the best team of football right now. The Detroit Lions coming to town in 2 weeks, actually a little bit less than 2 weeks now, for Sunday Night Football. That game's at home. Like, the home road thing, it shouldn't be something that you completely excuse away, but maybe it's something that the Texans right now aren't ready to deal with. But if the Lions come into NRG where they've played really well, I believe CJ's record is now, what, 10-2 in his career in home games? If the Lions come in and do to you what the Packers and the Vikings do, then I think you've got your answer. This team, while capable of winning the AFC South, capable of making the playoffs and probably winning a playoff game, I think they're kind of at the level that we've seen. And maybe this step forward that we're all hoping for is maybe a year away and not this year.
Yeah, we just haven't seen it yet. Could they get there? Yes, they could get there. But at some point, if they're just – then maybe it's after the trade deadline, to your point, you know, adding pieces. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's after you get those guys that are hurt back. Maybe it's in 6 weeks. Who knows when that is? But if their highest level of football – by week 14 is this, then it's probably who they are. At the same time, you can get hot in the postseason and make a run. The Diggs injury, I wish CBS would have kept with how the doctors were working on Diggs' knee longer. Like, we saw very little of it. And even the posts that are out on Twitter and stuff like that, like Aaron Wilson, his video that has went viral is right before Diggs gets up and walks off, like, off the field. So you don't see what the doctors were doing. The TV cuts off right before they start digging at the knee. I'm pretty sure they did the structure test where they can
lateral.
The doctors can tell like this, guys.
For an ACL.
I know that I am not a doctor, but I've been around sports for a very long time. I've talked to doctors. Whenever I talk to them, they're like, trying to explain it to a second grader. But I've talked to doctors. They might not think I'm very smart, but I've talked to them. But when they go out there and they grab that ACL, or an Achilles, they can tell like that. Now, those are the ones that are easy to tell. There's sometimes where there's a little bit, it's not as easy. They need to take a look at the MRI, all of that stuff. But knowing they do that stuff quickly, knowing that Stephon Diggs popped up, walked off the field and straight to the locker room without going to the medical tent, I don't have a very good feeling about it.
Yeah, the problem to your point is you see him go into the blue tent.
No, he never went into the blue tent.
I thought you saw him walking towards the blue tent.
He went straight to the locker room, did he not?
No,
I thought he went to the blue tent.
Yeah, I thought they showed him walking to the blue tent, then they went back to game action, and the next thing you saw, they had a camera behind
right.
him
That's what
walking towards
well.
The locker room and kind of up the ramp. So I guess you're supposed to feel like, well, he's walking on it. Is that a positive? But you don't know, because if he's walking to the locker room, he's probably going to get further evaluation.
You can walk on a torn ACL.
Yeah.
There's some people who aren't athletes who like have damaged.
It.
Yeah, I mean,
I'm making your point. I'm not an athlete, and I walked off with a torn ACL.
Craig Biggio, when he tore his ACL, walked off the field. He walked off the field. Like, people have done it. I didn't think that Diggs went to the tent. I thought he walked to the sideline and then straight up to the locker room.
I'd have to go back and check the TV, but I thought I remember him going. I mean, obviously, the Texans had multiple people going.
No,
this
Wilson, tweet, he's going straight to the locker room. He walks off the field. He does take a weird walk to the locker room, which is probably what confused people. He walks, like, straight to the sideline, but then he takes an abrupt right turn and goes straight up to the locker room. So, like, if you're not going to the medical tent, you probably got some information from the doctors right then and there.
Either that, or they want to verify whatever they need to verify. I mean, look, they have all the things in the locker room.
What are you looking at with a right knee in the locker room that you're not looking at on the field?
I don't think you can just go by what the doctors. I understand what you're saying about they can feel and a lot of things are going to become clear to them. But I think they still need the validation to make.
No doubt about it. But there's nothing that you can do for testing for an ACL in the locker room that you can't do on the field. Nothing.
Do they have MRIs in buildings?
I don't think that they do, but even an MRI is going to take some time to get the results. Like, and D'Amico said he's getting an MRI today, or that was reported.
Okay, because I thought normally.
I don't think that they have MRIs.
You could get the MRIs
they have
rather
X-rays.
Quickly.
Yeah, they have X-rays.
They have
I don't think they have
in
MRI
the stadium.
Things at stadiums.
I'd be curious, because I thought that they were. Yeah, I don't know if they have that as well, but yeah, you definitely know that they have X-rays.
My only pushback to what you said, Jeremy, about if the doctor tells you, okay, this is bad, let's skip the blue tent, let's go straight back. If that is the case, which I totally agree with you, it could be. If it is, why wouldn't you cart him off? Why would you let him walk all the way from the middle of the field all the way back to the locker room?
Well, you're not going to do any more damage on a torn ACL.
Yeah, I mean, I guess if they think it's clean.
There's also the aspect of the player. Hey, Diggs, I'm a tough son of a gun. I'm walking off.
Yeah.
Like, there's that element of it, too.
I don't like it. I don't like the optics of it, but maybe they told him, like, it's done. What's done is done. It doesn't matter at this point.
We don't know the extent of the injury. Just all of the clues in watching a bunch of ACL tears in my life, this is one that screams ACL. I think best case scenario, it's a torn meniscus. It's 6 to 8 weeks.
I think the big thing is that whatever that they already saw and felt was enough for them to say, you won't be continuing in this football game. And then regardless of whether it's because of swelling and or the need for the MRI, that it was basically go shower up and get out of your uniform, because all you could do is more damage at this point. You're not going to play.
That's definitely best case scenario.
Yeah.
And
then, like you said, if it's a non-contact injury, and when they showed the replay the way it was, when he was kind of, putting leverage on the right leg before he tried to turn back in.
Yeah.
It looks like it's, you hope it's a sprained something instead of a torn something, but that's normally a bad scenario, especially on the field turf.
I really wish we had the doctors like filling the knee, because you can't. The CBS never showed us that. The Aaron Wilson, which is the best video I've seen of the injury and Diggs popping up and walking off, it starts too late to see that. But you see, like, Stroud talked after the game, and, like, he was kind of cryptic with how he was talking. It's like, you know, if we're going to be without him for a long time, like, all of these things. I don't have a very good feeling about it. And is this all speculation? It's a hypothesis. I would say it's a hypothesis more than it is a guess.
I think the biggest thing, too, is if we haven't heard anything by now.
They asked DeMeco today at his press conference, and DeMeco said that you were still evaluating.
Yeah, I just feel I've got a bad feeling.
Is that a second? The screams second evaluation or second opinion, doesn't it?
I don't know.
Because, I can't, obviously, I don't know the exact timeline of an MRI, but to me, if that's a thing they do early in the morning, they would have had the result by the time.
It depends on who you are, because remember, Jordan didn't bother rolling out of bed and got one done like batting practice time
that's
the next day.
Yeah.
I don't know their steps. Could they be seeking a second opinion? Yes. Could DeMeco Ryans just not be willing to give us the information yet? Yes. Could it still be kind of gray where it's not a complete tear, or they're still unsure, or they're waiting results? It could be all of those things.
Honestly, with a short game week, this could just be gamesmanship for Thursday.
I don't think so. I don't think that the Jets think that Stephon Diggs is playing Thursday. There is no way that you watched what happened to Stephon Diggs yesterday and you have a thought that he could be playing Thursday night football.
I agree, but I never subscribe to logical coaching theory. DeMeco could still be as tightly and close as he likes to play injury news, as little as he wants to tell us. Maybe just, I know they put out an estimated practice report, which of course Diggs did not practice for today. But there is, to me, a greater than 0% chance that he might be playing a little gamesmanship, trying to see if the Jets waste some time getting prepared for Diggs, even though we know he's not going to play.
You think the Jets will waste some time practicing?
Probably not.
Diggs.
But that doesn't stop. We see coaches do this all the time, though.
I'm not saying you're wrong, because you're right. It happens, and you don't know to what degree it does or doesn't give them extra stuff to do. I just think normally when you're dealing with a medical issue like this, by now, we would have known something. By now, they would have had something out as an update instead of just the fact that we all knew what CBS told us, which was, oh, by the way, he's out for the rest of the game with a knee injury. Well, obviously, we knew that. By now, we would think there'd be an update, tests have been done, where, like you said, second opinion, or the result is in, and we're still sitting here, you know, holding our breath, waiting for some kind of definitive answer.
I am also a huge body language reader, and I am a master at reading body language. And C.J. Stroud behind Stephon Diggs with a very concerned look on one knee. DeMeco Ryans is out talking to him, like squatted over, both hands on knees. Diggs immediately walking off the field. People are trying to give him a high fives, and he like doesn't even really pay any mind to them. You're saying he's like you right whenever he gets up, he embraces he gets up immediately gets up, he whispers into DeMeco Ryan's right ear. That's kind of odd, right? Immediately whispers into DeMeco Ryan's right ear, puts his hands on his hips, lowers his chin, and is disgusted, is distraught.
You hope that regardless of what he's telling him, you understand why, because no matter what it is, it's not a good scenario for him personally, knowing that he's playing for next year's contract and, you know, he's basically trying to show his wares for the Texans and for whoever else, and he can't do that if he's hurt, and if he's damaged goods, people aren't going to give him the money. But also, he knows what he means to this team, especially with Nico out. So,
but I don't think you're reacting the way that he reacted if it's we don't know yet.
I agree with that.
I think it's he was told by the doctors what happened. He delivered the news to DeMeco. He's upset, visibly upset, walking off the field with the information that he was told. Bobby Slowick pats him on the head.
Yeah.
Walking off dejected off the sideline, immediately into the locker room.
You're
no
not whispering
tent.
Meniscus or no. We'll wait and see into DeMeco's ear. You're whispering ACL.
Kyemi Fairbairn tries to give him a high five, and Diggs is so upset, doesn't even see him. I'm just
Maybe
saying
he just
what I see.
Like kickers.
I'm just saying what I hope that I'm completely wrong with body language. As a body language expert, self-proclaimed, I hope that I'm very, very wrong about this. It's just my read. It's just my read.
I mean, look, I'm hopeful because I hear everything you're saying. I'm hopeful that he probably got the wide gamut of what the doctor said, worst case scenario, and at the best case scenario, maybe it's a torn meniscus. Either way, he's going to miss significant time. So I'm sure that's something that he's not happy about, that the team wouldn't be happy about, especially because they're already beat up at the position.
All right, so speaking of Diggs potentially being out a significant period of time, how long, we do not know. But can this team survive? If Diggs is out, Can this team survive? 713-780-3776. It's the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
On ESPN 97.5 and
92.5. Ocho, what's up, guys? Sorry I'm late. I was tired. I ain't going to lie. See what you did there. 9780 sent us a fake Adam Schefter tweet. 9780, I hope for your sake that you were trying to get us and you didn't get got by the fake Adam Schefter, but fake Adam Schefter today. I did see some people get got. Fake Adam Schefter said Texans believe Stephon Diggs tore an ACL, blah, 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 blah. Hashtag H-Town made, and a lot of people bit on this. I hope this texter was trying to make us bite. I hope he didn't get bit. If you got bit and you got, I'm glad it was you and not us. 8863, Blanker spitting fire again. Well, he is brilliant. He is brilliant, according to at least one Twitter guy. They have enough at receiver. The main problem is protecting CJ so he has time to get through progressions. I've seen Mitchie run routes when he is wide open. Hutch is good. As long as Nico gets and stays healthy, I believe we'll be okay at receiver. Do you think the Texans are going to be okay at receiver should Stephon Diggs miss a sustained period of time?
I want to say yes, because Nico's going to be back, I think, in a week. And if you believe what the reports were, that he's ahead of schedule, that he's going to be ready after the Jets game.
You know whose reports there were?
What?
You know who reported that?
Aaron Wilson.
That's right.
Well,
right,
no, CBS did too.
What are we at now? 85% of the time?
I'll go 92%. Did they 92%? Report that, or did they piggyback his report?
They didn't give him credit. They came TV, out.
The broadcast did? Oh, okay. Broadcast. That makes me feel better.
Yeah, and it was last week. It started last week that he was ahead of schedule.
Okay, good.
That he was progressing well. Good.
Everyone's ahead of schedule.
Good.
Okay, but they said that he was ahead of schedule.
I was encouraged that he was on the sideline.
Yeah.
I was encouraged by that.
So I want to believe and feel good about the fact that he's going to be back with Tank. Look, I thought that Woods, for his lack of use, came in, he was effective. I think Hutchinson looks like he's being used more, and whether you thought it was a catch or not, and I thought he did hang on
he
to the football.
He caught
yeah, I feel good about the fact that he's going to contribute as well. And so I don't think that there should be any kind of panic as long as Nico's back after this week.
Yeah, I'm okay with where their wide receiver room is, too. I thought Tank played really well in this past game. He had a 15-yard catch that was also wiped away by the worst illegal formation call I've seen in my entire life. Worst illegal formation call I've ever seen. Tank Dell had an easy 15-yard gain. They called it back for a bad illegal formation. But you get Nico back in a couple of weeks, hopefully, knock on wood. Like you mentioned, Woods. I think that Mechie and Hutchinson have something. I think that they have some juice. I think that they have something. So I'm okay with that being your wide receiver room. And especially, trade deadline is right around the corner. But I don't think that you need to make a move. I'm okay with where they are. Now, if Nick Caserio wants to be aggressive and go find a receiver, I'm not going to stand in his way for that willing Dylan, son of a gun. But I think that adding a receiver is more of a luxury than a necessity. Thank you, Ric Flair. I don't think they need to make a move. I'm okay with what they have. I think they'll be okay. I think that they'll be fine. If you do make that move, for me, it's more of a luxury than a necessity.
Yeah, I think that, look, if they're going to make moves, there's other areas you can make moves for to try and improve at before you start looking at wide receiver. I think that the difference from last year to this year is you've got too much talent in that room, and they've shown it. And the minute that Diggs went down, they went to Tank multiple times, and Tank was able to, you know, to make catches and do things for the offense too. I just feel like there's other areas if you are, you know, looking to make a move, and even if you don't, if you're looking to make moves, I don't think you have to do it at wide receiver.
Yeah, I'm okay with where they're at there. I thought I recognized you from WebMD, said 1368. Really, I'm reading body language. I'm not really reading the injury, more body language than anything else. 0891, with Diggs out week 9, they need to use Mechie and Hutchinson more. They really have no choice. Right. I mean, at a necessity. What's the old saying that invention is the mother of necessity?
But you have you reverse
necessity is the mother of invention. There you go. Necessity is the mother of invention. Mechie, Hutchinson, you're the mother of invention or necessity or whatever I'm saying. 8341. Of course, we're going to survive. We got the Jets Thursday. Then we got a week and a half off. And Nico's going to be back, and the other receivers are going to be doing good. So it looks like the trust is there. The trust is there.
I don't like the dismissive nature of this. We have the Jets Thursday. Like, the one thing they do really well, obviously, they lose to the Patriots. So, I mean, I get the skepticism with taking them seriously. But the one thing we know they do really well is defend the pass. And you might be down to Tank Dell and a bunch of guys that probably shouldn't be starting. Thursday, like, my panic level is...
yours is about this one game.
Yeah, my panic level for Thursday is about a 7 or 8. It's pretty high. But for when Nico comes back and beyond, it's like a one. I'm not concerned at all. Like, you were had a very effective passing offense with just Nico and Tank and a bunch of basically the same guys as last year. So I'm not worried about this passing offense once Nico comes back. But for Thursday, short week, only Tank Dell on the road against a really good pass defense, I'm pretty worried about it.
Look, I don't feel good about Thursday night regardless because of the fact that they didn't look great yesterday and the fact that, you know, you're only going to have one of your premier three receivers, it looks more than likely. And the fact that, you know, there's stuff to clean up for a defense that can get after the quarterback, that's got two really good corners that can play defensively the way they need to play to kind of bottle up this offense. You're playing it on, you know, where bad things happened last year on really bad turf in a short week. I just don't feel great about the game regardless, because of all those things and the fact that, you know, on national TV, I'm sure the Jets are going to try to make one last stand as well. And they've got Adams getting more comfortable and they've got weapons on offense.
713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line. I'm going to tell you why I'm not worried about Thursday's game on the other side. Are you worried about Thursday? What about the short week, too? How difficult is that for the Houston Texans? Your thoughts on yesterday's game as well. 713-780-3776, the HRMP listener line. 713-780-3776. It's the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.
Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Right now, get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. Plus, get three Scotts NatureScapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, see Lowe's.com for more details. Excludes Alaska and Hawaii.